the governor unveiled his state spending plan, some political theater on Jones Street, and America's latest mass shooting. Time to get caught up on The Week in Politics. I'm Jeff Tiberi. This is the Politics Podcast from WUNC. Glad to have you along. Happy Friday, as they say. Here for our discussion on some of what happened in North Carolina politics this week are Rob Schofield from the Progressive NC Policy Watch and Becky Gray with the conservative John Locke Foundation. We recorded this conversation Thursday afternoon. Hi there.
Hey there. Great to be
with
friends.
You. Good to be back.
This conversation was recorded Thursday afternoon. Governor Roy Cooper is calling for significant raises for teachers and Medicaid expansion, again, among dozens of other provisions. At a Wednesday press conference, the Democrat outlined his state budget proposal, calling it a fiscally responsible path forward as part of the effort to help grow the economy coming out of the pandemic. Reminder, the governor's budget proposal is something of a symbolic first pitch at the negotiating table. Is this more of a policy proposal or a political document? Becky?
I think it's a political document designed to score partisan points. I mean, the governor, you know, is really in the enviable position that he can kind of go out there, make these proposals, knowing that it's not going to be passed by the General Assembly and not going to be part of the constitutional requirement to have a balanced budget. We've seen him do this before, and he has that's how I see this budget again. You know, the spending is just sort of breathtaking. He'd spend $2.8 billion more than this current year. That's an 11.6% increase in spending. So when you look at those kinds of things, I mean, we can get into what exactly he is funding and where that money would go. But I think that this is a first pitch. It is an opportunity for the governor to show what his priorities are. And I believe that it is a political statement on his part.
Quick follow-up clarification before we go to Rob. You referenced not being a balanced budget. There is enough money with cash available on hand to increase. You might not like the idea of increasing by 12% government spending, but his budget would be a balanced budget, would it
right,
not?
Right, and yeah, maybe I misspoke or wasn't clear. No, we do have a constitutional requirement to have a balanced budget in North Carolina. You know, the governor, though, is not going to have to administer this budget because this is never going to be the one that's going to pass into law.
Well, all budget proposals, all legislative proposals are political, of course, but this is actually, no, a very serious policy proposal. And indeed, from the perspective of a lot of progressives, I think they were sort of generally disappointed in many respects that they felt that the governor was too cautious. It's a very conservative proposal in many respects. There are lots of, I mean, we're in desperate straits right now. We've got huge percentages of the North Carolina population still that doesn't know where their next meal is coming from, that doesn't know how they're going to be able to pay the rent. It is the time for important, significant changes in how we administer government. The Medicaid expansion proposal ought to be front and center. It's way overdue. We already see other conservative Republican-led states and other parts of the country already moving now to expand Medicaid. It's going to happen at some point. We're just delaying the inevitable and costing thousands of lives by not doing it. They need to take the governor up on this proposal. The idea of cutting taxes in a targeted way for low-income people with restoring the earned income tax credit is a great idea. But I frankly was disappointed there wasn't a lot more done for education. The needs that have been outlined in the Leandro court settlement that really chart a very ambitious but absolutely essential path forward for the state if we're going to comply with the Constitution and the mandate to provide every child with a sound basic education call for a lot more. I mean, the Democrats have had to introduce a bill just to get nurses in every school. The governor spends more money on that issue, but he doesn't even probably fund that at the level that needs to happen. But there's good stuff on broadband, helping recovering businesses, workforce training, that's good too. And we're going to see a lot more details as we go forward because there's a lot of federal money that needs to be allocated as well. But the bottom line is we're in a crisis right now, and this is a time for the state to really step up to the plate. And I think a lot of people wish that the governor had been more ambitious with his proposal.
You mentioned education. You did note that bill that has been filed by a couple of Democratic state senators that would provide more funding for nurses in school. You mentioned Leandro, but hammer down for me, if you would, if only for an item or two, Rob. Are you talking about funding for special ed, more per pupil funding? Is it textbooks? What specifically is not in this budget that should be?
all of the above. I mean, what the Leandro settlement says, I mean, basically what the, what it boils down to is that in North Carolina, our schools have been doing heroic work, but they remain underfunded. They have overcrowded classrooms, lousy facilities. We've got teachers who are underprepared, administrators who are overmatched. And all of that is attributable to the fact that we continue to desperately underfund every aspect of public education in the state. And it's most acute in some of our poorer counties. The needs are, you know, just astounding. They're huge. And we need to address that now. And pretty soon, we're going to have a court that's going to order us to do this, I very much hope. And so I think it would be, it behooves both the governor and the legislature to really tackle this problem right now. I did note that the governor's talked about a bond, which is, you know, our facility needs are desperate in public education and in other places as well. But again, I just see the need far exceeding actually many parts of this budget. I think the governor is really trying seriously to find some common ground with the legislature, and I think he's hopeful of that. I think, you know, there are those on the progressive side who wished he had just, you know, been more ambitious and then maybe tried to find some common ground that way. I think he's more sincere in thinking this is the kind of proposal that they could actually reach an agreement on.
Friendly reminder, we're going to be talking about the state spending plan for months to come. But before we move on, Becky, give me something that is in this budget that you're on board with.
The fact that there are no tax increases is something that I absolutely am on board with. The thing that concerns me is the spending. Rob mentioned the bond package. I think to borrow money right now is, there's just no reason to borrow it. We've got some money to meet those capital needs, and we should rely on that.
We've got other topics, so I don't want to cut you off. I want to do a brief follow-up with you, Becky, before we get to another topic. Interest rates are at record lows. Why is this not the time to begin some of that long-term infrastructure build-out?
Well, why would you borrow money if you have cash that you can pay for it and not pay any interest rates at all? So I think it's the way that you allocate the money, the way that you assess what your needs are, and try to pay as you go, if you will, rather than increasing the debt. And don't forget that bonds are issued as time goes on, depending on what the interest rates are at the time. And so there's no assurances with that. So I think the more fiscally responsible thing to do would be to really assess what the needs are and pay as we go, pay as we can for those things as if that works and how that works.
State Elections Director Karen Brinson Bell was grilled for more than 2 hours on Wednesday. Republicans remain upset with her handling of a lawsuit settlement during the election last fall. There were a number of legal challenges to absentee regulations, and legislative leaders say that Brinson Bell and the state board usurped the General Assembly in reaching a legal settlement, and did so after the election was underway. Certainly something of political theater earlier this week, but it does smell like some proposal is coming from Republican lawmakers. Rob, do you have any anticipation what might come in the wake of this?
Well, it's just remarkable to me. I mean, if ever there was an election that showed that expanding access to the ballot, making early voting or easier, making voting by mail easier works, it was the 2020 election in North Carolina. We've had no credible accusations of fraud or malfeasance, and yet voter turnout was through the roof. And indeed, Republicans swept race after race. If there was ever a group of politicians who ought to be happy with how things went in that year's, in last year's election, it's Republican lawmakers. Unfortunately, there's a national drive from conservatives across the country, from the Trump campaign, from Fox News and those folks saying, no, no, we want to cut back on voting. We want to go back in the direction of voter suppression, making it harder to vote. And that's what they're doing. So they're going to, we've already seen a proposal in the Senate to make it harder to cast ballots by mail. They're going to have to be in by 5 o'clock on election day. God forbid they showed up a day or two afterwards, make it harder to actually request an absentee ballot. It's going in precisely the wrong direction. And it's just so ironic that the Republicans in North Carolina lack the courage to look at the results on the ground here and say, this worked. It worked for democracy. It worked for us. But they'd rather, you know, adhere to the national conservative talking points than actually look at what happened on the ground and do what's right. So I just thought this was a remarkable exercise in silly theater this week, and probably just the beginning of debates we're going to have, and they're going to pass voter suppression legislation. The governor will veto it, and that will be what we'll be doing in 2021.
Becky, hang on 1 second. Rob, did the Board of Elections and Karen Brinson Bell usurp the authority of the legislature in making that settlement last fall?
Of course not. That's why the courts approved it. If the courts had determined that there was some illegal usurpation here, they wouldn't have rejected the attempts by Berger and Moore to have those things overturned. But the court said, no, this is utterly appropriate. That's what happens when you're in a circumstance like that. The legislature's out of session. Time is limited. They got to act. They've been sued. The courts have already, judges have already indicated they're likely to rule for the plaintiffs. Settlements like this happened all the time. It was a perfectly logical thing to do. And again, it ended up with this excellent result for all people involved, Republicans, Democrats, and democracy. So it was a win-win-win. And the notion that we're going to refight that and try to scale back our efforts to allow people to vote is just remarkable.
Well, of course, the question around the hearing this week was, you know, what happened with the moves and what did Karen Brinson Bell do with the lawyers in the State Board of Elections, the Attorney General Josh Stein's office, and Democratic Attorney Mark Elias? You know, what happened with that? Those were really what she was asking. I mean, this, you know, That's what this dispute centered on, and this is what that hearing was about, where the senators really wanted to get on record and determine whether Brinson Brown was acting in a dubious way. She claims that she just did what the State Board of Elections told her to do. You know, was this a secret settlement? Why was the General Assembly not brought into this? You know, she admitted, and they've said that, you know, they changed the rules around the election. You know, that is really the question. Why was the General Assembly not brought into this? Why was the General Assembly not called back to make that? The General Assembly had made clear what the law was, and this settlement that was made without their consent or their knowledge at all circumvented what the intent of the General Assembly was. That's what this hearing was all about.
America's latest mass shooting took place at a grocery store in Boulder, Colorado. 10 people dead. Another community grieving. The gunman is a 21-year-old whose lawyer cited mental illness in a first court appearance on Thursday. With divided government here in North Carolina, it would seem unlikely that any gun reforms are imminent. Still, wondering from each of you, what is one reform that theoretically could be approved in North Carolina and help to reduce the number of people who die from gun violence each year? Becky?
Well, first of all, I think it's important to note that this tragic situation in Colorado would not have been prevented. None of the things that gun law advocates have proposed would have stopped this tragic thing in Colorado. So, I mean, I think that's important to note, that even with processes in place, even with the rules that we have in place, you know, nothing is for sure.
But is that to insinuate that there's nothing that can be done to prevent any gun violence?
Well, I think when you have people who are, you know, tragically mentally ill, when you have people that are prone to do these kind of things, I think that, you know, to me, it becomes more of a mental health issue. I think we need to be really careful when we start pulling back on people's Second Amendment rights and don't focus on what is the cause of these things, which are the severe mental health issues. And I believe that we have We have not addressed those in this country and in this state as we should and we need to.
So background checks, waiting periods, red flag laws, limits on the capacities, none of those should be on the table.
I think we already have all those, don't we?
No, we clearly don't. I mean,
there's background check requirements. There's, you know, there are many of the firearms that are limited that you can purchase. There's limits on the amount of ammunition or the types of ammunition. I mean, we do have gun laws in this country. I mean, I think that's important to recognize as we begin to talk about these.
Go ahead, Rob.
We do have gun laws, and it points out the obvious fact that there's got to be a line somewhere. I mean, we're not going to allow every American, I presume, to have their own surface-to-air missiles or, you know, high-caliber machine guns. I mean, there is some limit. So it's just a question of where we draw the limit. And this notion of high-capacity guns, the assault weapons still being lawful, the fact that you can just buy one and walk right out on the street, many states have passed these red flag laws, these so-called extreme risk protection orders, Marsha Morey has been introducing that legislation here in North Carolina. It is an obvious, simple solution. It requires, if the family of a disturbed individual says, oh my gosh, I'm worried about suicide, I'm worried about my family member, they can go to a judge and the judge can issue, make a finding and issue an order. It's a common sense solution. It's been done in many states. There are safe storage laws. There are background checks. There's a long list of common sense things that would still, it would still be easier to buy a gun than it is to, say, get a driver's license, but at least we'd have some restrictions on them. But as it is now, it's just, we're just going to have these mass shootings every week across the country, and, you know, and all of us have our freedom grievously limited as a result of that, because we have to walk around in fear every time we're in a public place. We have to live in fear of so many things that ought, that we ought to be able to take for granted that this isn't the case in a modern country, but yet we live in fear, and thereby our freedom is greatly impinged by this preposterous lack of basic regulation.
But you can't take away people's freedom to defend themselves. And so, again, I think it comes back to a balance.
Nobody's saying that that shouldn't happen, that people shouldn't be able, just as I, you know, I can't drive a car without a driver's license. It simply seems to me to make eminent sense that a person who wants to walk around with an assault weapon or a deadly firearm ought to at least have to have some training, pass some sort of a test, and have it regulated and have a license. That's just common sense. And the fact that we don't even do that is just an invitation to more of this dreadful carnage that eventually is going to affect all of our families and loved ones.
I guess just two quick points of context here. One, based on a number of polls that have taken place over years, there is widespread support from the American people for some firearm or gun reforms. That's point one. And a second point of context, which I looked up this week, I did not know. I knew that the number of gun deaths in our country that are deaths by suicide, I knew it was high, but I looked it up this week. It's about 2/3. Not something that we necessarily were really getting into there, but just a point of context as we think about all the gun violence and all the gun deaths in our country, about 2/3 of them are deaths by suicide. So just a couple of points there to wrap up the conversation briefly from either of you. I know we're almost out of time. Rob?
It's just a remark. You're right. It's a remarkable statistic. Unfortunately, there is a disconnect between our conservative political leadership in so many issues here in North Carolina and where voters are, whether it's on Medicaid expansion, the minimum wage, gun rights, reproductive freedom. The list goes on where 2/3 of the voters want to do something, but the Republican majority continues to resist the kind of reform that is popular and makes common sense.
Jeff, I think that statistic that you mentioned of 2/3 are suicides. And I think that really shines the light on the need for mental health services, really paying attention to this. I think we're going to have to change the way that we look at a lot of things after this pandemic. And one of the things that I don't think that we've realized is after almost a year of the economy being shut down, of kids not being in school, of people being out of work, you know, all of these things, that the mental health issue and the mental health challenges that we're going to have moving forward are serious. And this statistic that you talked about suicide, you know, we're seeing this with students, with school kids that have not been in school. It's something we're going to have to address. So as we look at those, you know, the question has to be asked, you know, why does somebody commit suicide, and what do we need to do to help people before that kind of thing happens?
Might also, last line, just be shown that the success rate for suicide of people who use guns as opposed to people who use drugs or other means of committing suicide is vastly more effective. So again, guns right at the heart of that problem.
Does that 2/3 figure move you at all on red flag laws, Becky?
I think we need to look at it. You know, absolutely. I mean, I'm not saying that we shouldn't have any control over guns. I'm just saying that we also have a right to protect ourselves and protect our families, and I don't want to see those freedoms taken away. There's got to be a balance.
Rob Schofield is director of NC Policy Watch. Becky Gray is senior vice president at the John Locke Foundation. Enjoy your weekends.
Thanks. You too. Great
Thanks,
to be
guys.
With
Take
you.
Care.
The WNC Politics Podcast drops in your feeds twice a week. So too does another fine pod from the station, Tested. And happy birthday to Tested. It turned 1 year old this week. That's a fun and proud accomplishment. Don't forget, Dating While Gray and Embodied, also in the queue, available to you, podcasts from North Carolina Public Radio. Yes, we are still, for a little bit while longer in a pledge drive. If you have already called, I want to say a sincere thanks. If you've pledged online, thank you again. And if you have not yet given and you are in a position to do so, please think about visiting us at WUNC.org. You can click on Give, or you can call 800-962-9862. For Becky and Rob, I'm Jeff. Enjoy some hoop this weekend. We'll talk to you on Tuesday.